Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man whose dizziness has abated. It's Richard Herring! Oh, thank you very much. Ah, oh, that's what we want. That is what we want. Lovely to see you all. Thank you so much for coming. And lovely to see a full Leicester Square Theatre again. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Though I was talking to Tony, Mark and David, Anna and Su Yin from off of the Lost Islands. I'm very keen to try and repopularise this. It's my Pete K moment. And they call it Rahelastabus. I don't know if that's kind of... Come on, you know. Remember the Lost Islands, don't you, David? Do you remember the song went on? You've got to have listened to the Matthew Holness podcast. Go and listen to it afterwards if you haven't. At the end it goes, and David and no, what is it? It's Tony, Mark and David, Anna and Su Yin are left here on the island. What will next begin? The adventure lies behind them. Danger is ahead. Can't remember how it goes. Just trying to get all of the Lost Island in. I remembered the final verse, but after the show. It's too late to talk about it. Anyway, look, it's great to be here. I've been a bit dizzy. I'm better now. It's all right. That's good. But I was on a dog walk yesterday, actually, and I went a different route than usual, by the cricket pitch, you know it, in my village. And there was something I've been there loads of times. There was something I'd never seen before, which was there was a plaque on the ground in the middle, just by the cricket pitch, and it said, "This oak tree has been donated by North Hertfordshire District Council to commemorate the birth of His Royal Highness Prince George of Cambridge on the 22nd of July, 2015. Now, the unusual thing about that is there is no oak tree near the plaque. The plaque is there, but there's no... Closer, there's a little circular patch of slightly greener grass that might possibly indicate where there was once an oak tree, but...
If there ever was an oak tree, it has gone, or it failed to grow from its acorn, and yet no one has even taken the plaque away or thought to replace the oak tree with another oak tree. As a result, it's slightly sinister. It's a plaque to a baby with a thing that isn't there. Didn't work out, but no one can be asked to do anything about it, which seems a lot worse than just honouring a baby. Feels like a bad omen for George as well. I don't want to say if anything negative ever happens to George, the baby, I'll be blaming North Hertfordshire County Council. I blame them for most things, mainly my bins not being emptied on time, and also my daughter having to go to school in the next village along rather than our village, which has a perfectly decent school. I just thought I'd have a crack at North Hertfordshire District Council. 13 siblings in her year, only 15 kids allowed in each class. We live half a mile away, it's ridiculous. Okay. And if failing to maintain or plant an oak tree is not treasonous, I don't know what is. What if Prince George one day sees that and wonders where his fucking oak tree is? Yeah, he could be king by then. He could nuclear bomb North Hertfordshire and no one would blame him. Personally, I think if they're planting oak trees for one baby, they should do it for all of them. So I'm glad there is no oak tree, because I think my kids should have an oak tree as well. But if you're going to plant an oak tree for a baby, then you have to see things through, or at least dig up the plaque showing your obsequious support for an infant that's happened to slide out of the right birth canal. But, you know, not since Ozymandias has there been such a potent representation of hubris. Good. So welcome to the show. Welcome, of course, to the people who are live streaming at this exact moment at home, watching at home. Isn't that insane? I hope it's working. It worked well last week, so that's a good sign. Let's crack straight on. We've got an amazing guest for you this week, of course. Possibly my favourite ever guest. So hard to pick. They're all like children. He is probably best known for his appearance on Match of the Day 2. I literally just looked up 5 minutes ago because I'd forgotten to do one, and that was the first thing I saw. That's why we're all here. Will you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Bob Mortimer! Hello.
Thank you very much.
They're very nice. Very nice audience tonight. How are you, Bob?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
It's my first trip up for, you know, since lockdown.
Is
and
it?
That. Yeah, so I'm a bit nervous about it.
And coming to...
It seems to have made me talk a little bit Yorkshire. Is that one of the side effects? Do you can? Sorry.
It could be. Well, I think we're a long distance away from the mob here.
Yeah.
Bob, so hopefully...
I mean, I am a bit of a spitter. I was a bit worried about that.
Oh, yeah. It's all, we can infect them as long as they don't infect us.
I mean, that's what you think, isn't it? I was sat in bed thinking last night, that's all right. It's like you're facing a cobra with my spit. But I'm all right. Imagine if you could coil. I don't know, Richard. It feels like it could be... There are a lot of possibilities there. Instantly coil.
It would be good. And uncoil. The uncoiling would be the fun part for me.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. You could certainly clean suspension... You know.
Yeah.
The suspension.
You could use yourself as some kind of circular loofah, for sure. But, I mean, there'd be so much more to do with it than that. I think that's interesting.
I think so.
Would that be your main port of call?
What?
To clean...
To clean coils. No, it seems a waste to use a coil to clean a coil.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean?
I do. That's why I was surprised that was... I would just jump out and surprise people.
I suppose so, yeah.
You could be in a basket, a very small basket, and then jump out.
If you had a granddad who could play the flute for you or something, and at a certain note, boing, you coil up. I wouldn't spit. I would never spit.
Well, I was going to talk to you about... I've been reading your absolutely fantastic book. I read the whole thing and away. It's brilliant and everyone will get it anyway. So there's no need... Yeah, absolutely, but it's brilliant. One of the things I think was very interesting very early on was you were talking about your childhood and the boy in the changing rooms who could...
Retracto.
Yeah, retract his...
Yes, it's absolutely true. not really a friend, but someone said, come here, mate. See what's in the shower room?
Yeah.
He said, come and watch this. And I was a little lad. What would we be, about 12 or 13? And we watched him. We're all starkers. And he like concentrated like that, and his penis retracted into, so that there was just like an extra belly button.
Yeah.
I mean, that was amazing.
I mean, that's just, but I think with that skill, if that, what would you do? It seems a shame to, A, I thought, like, it's very bold of that kid to reveal that to other kids. Yeah, there was a moment you had to think, am I going to let them know? Will they admire me or will they mock me? They have to think about that. You know, that could be it for life.
It's a big call.
It is.
It's a big call to decide.
Am I going to do
but
this
for
you?
But if you could retract it.
Yeah.
You'd want people to know, would you?
I would, but what would you... I wouldn't, where is he now and why is he not... Why is this not an act that he's... If he's out there, you're welcome to be a guest on the show. And just... We can spend an hour just retracting and presumably...
Well, you'd never...
Un-retracting.
Would you ever tire of it?
I wouldn't.
I don't...
It might be just something that a child can do and then once you've got to adulthood...
Oh, a bit like the singers when they lose their voice. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, retracto. Where, if you threaten him, he will form a cranny, something like that. But yeah, two useless powers. Well, I can coil up and I can retract, and they'll just shoot you.
Yeah, that's good. I knew the book was going to be good straight away. The thing that got it's obviously weird. It's based around we last had you on the show in 2015 in about July, I think, and
right.
And later that year you were to have this medical emergency where you ended up having to have a triple heart bypass. That sounds really bad.
It does. I've subsequently found out that the real men have a quad.
Right.
It's funny that there are there's grades of it. I'm in the zipper club. We're all in the zipper club. Because you have that scar down there. But, you find with... But a lot of people, message me now and email me saying they're going to have it. Is it, or I've had it and it was fine and so on and so forth. But the pride of it... It turned out mine was a capital quad. But I was a triple. They said... I remember my surgeon said to me... I was very near a tour, Richard, when I had to cancel it to have the operation. And he said I would have dropped, probably dropped at Southampton, Mayflower. At the Mayflower. Do you know that theatre?
I don't really know the Mayflower.
I don't think you'd choose it as...
No, the place to go.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I shall drop at the Royal Opera House.
Yeah.
But no, Southampton, Mayflower.
Because Eric Morecambe went in Tewkesbury, I think, wasn't it? Was that right? I've played the venue, but so few people came to see me that I ended up playing the bar, is all I remember.
do they mark it in any way?
I think the dressing room is named after it. Maybe you can name the theatre, but they should name the theatre after Eric Morecambe. If you've died there, that should be automatic, shouldn't it?
It's funny getting old, isn't it? Because when you think of, I think it would be the same for you. Like Eric Morecambe, that's a giant, isn't it?
Yeah.
An absolute giant, but I can already feel his, now I'm not going to feel his memory fading.
Yeah.
So it's a bit sad, isn't it?
It is, but he's lasted longer than a lot. There's really famous people from who would be his contemporaries who, that's show business, isn't it? Show business, you can be a huge star and then just completely forgotten within 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think it happens so quickly to footballers, for example.
No. Maybe, yeah. But the younger generation, but then they are very much a footballer's a certain period of time. So your dad might go, there was this great footballer 20 years ago, but you wouldn't know him yourself. So
did your dad used to make you watch comics who weren't funny? Or didn't seem to be?
My dad wasn't very interested in comedy, so yeah.
What was he interested in?
Mathematics.
I'm not laughing at maths. I know how important it is, but
he's still with us. Luckily, he was very. I remember because I'd get book tokens and I'd buy Charlie Brown books, and my dad was really disappointed with that because he wanted me to buy a proper book.
Yeah,
but as it turns out, that was what I was interested in. I knew at that stage that I wanted to do comedy. So they didn't dissuade me, but they didn't...
Oh, shit, Richard, you knew really early.
I knew I was really interested in comedy very early on. Yeah, so, and I really liked people who made me laugh, and I didn't think I don't think I was thinking, I'm going to be a comedian. I wanted to be a clown when I was, five or six. I was aware that I loved making people laugh.
Yeah.
And even when they just laughed at something where I was making a mistake, I still loved it.
You still like that feeling.
Yeah, and so, I think I was gravitating towards that. Yeah. So yeah.
What would you have been called as a clown? Because it's an you can be any. I think I'd have been Cracker Barrel. He'd be fun, wouldn't he?
I don't even know what I mean. I could, that's I just remember seeing clowns at a circus. I remember being at a circus and being. I think I was scared of the clowns, which yeah. I know is a thing, isn't it? And my main memory of the circus is walking around the tent with someone else, or one of my family. I can't remember who it was because I was too scared to be in there and pass in a cage with a tiger in it.
Was so this in Middlesbrough, Richard?
It wouldn't have been in Middlesbrough. No. It would have been in Yorkshire.
In Yorkshire. And Billy Smarts or something.
Yeah, it would have been something like that. But that's my only... I don't remember anything else that went on inside the big top. And I remember walking around the edge because I was too scared. I was a very scared... I was a very nervous
but
child.
But that fear sort of enticed you in a way.
Maybe it did,
yeah. Weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm drawn to fire. I've burnt two buildings down. It's the weirdest thing, isn't it?
What's the second one? So you burnt down your house... We talked about this last time with fireworks.
Yeah.
And what was the other time?
Sorry, I've made that mistake because my son said to me last night, you've been involved in two major fires.
Okay.
So, sorry, I burnt my house down, my family home. But have you read in the book where I came home to the homeless hostel and it was gone?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, of course you have, yeah.
Southampton Way, Peckham.
Yeah.
It's funny that, isn't it? Like, I lived in a homeless hostel. I was on telly... doing Big Night Out, and got a request from Lloyd Grossman's mob to do, what was that called, Behind the Keyhole?
Yes.
And it's fucking Homeless Hostel. Homeless Hostel in Peckham. I was tempted. You know, who lives here? who would they have guessed? I don't know.
That's great. Well, it was, I mean, the book covers it brilliantly, but it is sort of astonishing. I mean, what I love about the book is within it, there's like four or five points where if something else had happened...
Oh, I'm so sorry, Richard.
Yeah.
But this could be, and it's yours to have if you think there's anything in it.
Yeah.
Forget the who lives here. What about who is the landlord?
Yeah.
You get three landlords lined up and show three different properties. That would be a decent
be good,
show.
Yeah.
And I do apologise.
Right. Honestly, if you have any ideas for shows, just let me. The thing you can get that commission tomorrow. Just go in and you'll get that commission. There's all these points where, and what's the? I think the, and we're just talking beforehand. I think the sort of seminal point of your life, the changing point in your life, was when you were living in one of these. Was it the same place?
It was in the hostel. Yeah,
the hostel.
Yeah,
and your girlfriend had moved in, and it sort of wasn't going great, but you came home to surprise her one lunchtime. Yes. She was having sex with somebody else in your bed.
She was having it off, as it were, with a combination farmer stroke Hell's Angel. A really unusual looking unit, but very efficient. I had a little VHS suit on and a plastic... Oh, fuck, man. I thought, yeah, you're quite right. But yes, that was the moment my life changed in many ways, yeah.
And so often, like, a negative thing or a big choice and, you know, you'd chucked your girlfriend out, unsurprisingly, and were depressed. And an old school friend from Middlesbrough got in touch out of nowhere and invited you to go to see the big
someone night. I would never have gone out with.
Yeah.
Who got my address off my mum back home. But in those, I didn't know a soul in London and the girlfriend had gone. So I thought, I'll go to this Dick Reeves big night out.
And if you hadn't had that terrible thing happen, awful thing happen, and if you hadn't decided to go that night, which you nearly didn't, then that's...
Well, I think one chance was I would have been so inspired by the Hell's Angel farmer that I would have maybe started my own range of agricultural equipment that was single-seater with handlebars. But no, it's funny, you know, like writing a book like that, you start to see the patterns and then find out that there usually isn't one. It's just that chance, you know. That,
but it is just like, I mean, it literally is sliding doors in the sense that that is one of the things that happens in sliding doors. is she comes home and finds him fucking someone else and their life changes. But there's also, there's an extraordinary thing where you've got two university places and you haven't decided which one to go to.
Yeah.
And you're driving down to heading down towards either Leicester or Cambridge and you make your decision which university you're going to go to on the motorway.
Yeah, but it was so difficult when you're reading the book. Like, my mum was so important to me. And it would have meant so much to her if I'd gone to Cambridge. But there was not a drop of me wanted to go. I wanted to go to Leicester to do this welfare law degree. I just couldn't tell her. So that's why that happened. I couldn't tell her to her face that I was on the way to Leicester, so...
So you sort of knew, but you hadn't turned down the Cambridge might still be waiting for you to turn up. There might be a room there. So that, you know, but again, I think if you'd gone to Cambridge, that's such a different, you know, your life is so different anyway when you make those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anyone who gets to my age will be able to, if they did that exercise, they'll find out, oh, fuck, that's the key point, that was a key, and you know, just meeting your partner is always an extraordinary bit of chance, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Extraordinary.
But it sort of, it makes you wonder how many Bob Mortimer quality comedians are out there in the world who don't happen to go into the
same night. It's true, because certainly when I was 30 and dealing with the broadcasters then, Richard, there could have been 1,000, but how you got seen, how you could have penetrated that building, it's different now.
Yeah.
I know you're a little bit passionate about, you know, why bother with... I have seen tweets with you. Am I saying the right thing?
Yeah, yeah.
You, there's different ways now, isn't there, which are...
I think that, you know, there's more sort of democracy to it in a sense.
Yeah.
Because things are so easy to... Now it's easy to make stuff.
Yeah. Like,
and the equipment isn't too expensive. You can borrow it or nick it, and and you've got a chance of making your own thing without someone interfering and telling you what to do. But I mean, all your stuff, it feels like no one. You were left to do what you wanted to do, and you. What I love about the book is just saying the way we do it is we don't want to tell you what's going to happen in the show. We'll just do the show, and you can move the cameras around.
Yeah.
Get enough cameras to cover it. No one would ever talk to people in TV like that unless they were just coming from, because you would think, oh, I've got to fit in and
but
you just did your own thing and they've always let you do your own thing.
Yeah, we didn't know the rules when we started, because I think we'd only maybe been in comedy 16 weeks, something like that. No, it's true, it's amazing.
That's why you're living in a home. I can't think of anybody who has walked, from going to see a comedy show to being on TV in such a short period of time, because you were on the Jonathan Ross's shows as a sort of character.
Yeah, that would be the first thing, yeah.
Yeah, within weeks.
I mean, I don't know if you had walked into that room and seen Vic Reeves like I did.
Yeah.
I think it all makes sense then.
Yeah.
He was extraordinary. He is a one-off vision, he's a total one-off. So if you'd been there, it makes sense.
Also, what I don't think you say in the book, because you're incredibly modest, and you'll, if you love Bob now, which I know you do, you'll read the book and you'll love him even more, because you find out what a decent person you are, but also the struggles you've been through as well. But he must have looked at you. It's not just you're a bloke. Oh, you present this check in this sketch. Maybe it was to begin with, but he saw something in you. He realised equally that you were something incredibly special, and it is the two of you coming together. However well formed he was at that point. Is what's made this endure and work is your two personalities.
Yeah, no, I don't underestimate me role, Richard. I never mean it to be like that. It's just that you'd kind of had to have seen him. He probably did need someone to pick out the best bits, tell him this, tell him that. But I think I say in the book, I suppose I was just like an amateur producer at the moment, because I was a solicitor at the time.
Yeah.
This wasn't a career move or anything. This was just this one night I had in my life that where there was some pleasure this Thursday night down at a pub in New Cross. Performing in a room at the back made everything else worthwhile. It was that was the end game. We didn't perform anywhere else.
No.
You know, we weren't on the comedy circuit or anything, but yeah.
But I think in that sense, it is like that's why you were sort of, because you were detached from everything, and, you know, it was sort of like the internet before the internet. You were doing your own... insane stuff and making. And what I love is you're saying that you didn't care if something worked or didn't work, and Vic Reeves didn't care if people were talking during a set. They usually wouldn't, but if they did, he would just get on with it.
Yeah.
And that's how you've got it. That's how you make your own thing. That's how you create your own thing. And then TV companies fighting over you to get you on TV and allowing you to just get on with it, which doesn't really happen. Yeah. So much anymore.
But the likes of Vic, someone who's got an idea that's out of the blue.
Yeah.
Does Paradigm fit here or not, Richard?
I don't really know what that means.
But, you know, I mean, it was gobsmacking. Yeah, I know, no. But of course television companies were going to say, what the fuck's, what's this?
Yeah.
Of course they were. But people like him are rare, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really rare. I don't know if there's been one since, Jib. Don't know. There might be, but
I think people come along, but it's that, you know, it completely captured the I mean, I think like the young ones captured the comedy of that generation. I think Vic and Bob and everything you did together sort of captured that mood, and people were ready for it. But nothing, it wasn't like, often that when something's a big success, there's been a couple of things that have come before that have got people used to it that haven't been as successful. I don't think there was with this. I think this was the original article coming in and maybe Viz a little bit, but it wasn't really.
Viz, for sure.
But it wasn't really the same. It wasn't the same sort of thing, but there was the element of showbiz and the Northeast as far as you can go.
Yeah.
I knew the book was going to be great, and the thing that really made me laugh the most in the book was you going to your GP's your GP very early on when you were getting diagnosed and being obsessed with his sink.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Dr. Longbottom.
Well, there's that as well. But the bit about the sink, I just thought this is... And that's, again, I think where there's a very low sink in the GP's room.
Very low. I think probably this high.
Yeah.
And your eye's drawn to it. You know, he's got computers, digital equipment and that, but there's a fucking low sink. And that's what's wrong. And he's a lovely man.
Yeah.
And he won't tell me.
Yeah. That's what I like about it. I like him not telling you. I like you really wanting to know.
He won't tell me that. And he plays the bass guitar. That's all I know about my doctor. And it's interesting, you don't know much about your doctors, do you?
No.
So it was really interesting. I went home and said to the wife, I said, you know, Dr. Bowles plays the bass guitar. And it felt like special info. Do you know nothing about them, do you?
No, it's true. Do you think he has a low sink to distract people away? Because, you know, you're going in with quite a serious issue and you're thinking about a sink rather than about whether your heart's going to be beating in 2 months' time. Maybe that's his ploy.
You know they say that thing, as soon as you go to the doctor, you're not ill.
Yeah.
Well, that's the case. You walk in, you see sink. I can't remember where I came from. That's a very low sink. And he gives you some aspirin. And did you used to get the Linctus when you were young? God, I'm getting all observer, you know, like, no. Do you remember? Do you remember the Linctus?
It was yes.
They'd give it to children so they thought that something was, they were important.
Yeah.
Something was being done. Tasted like blackcurrants or something.
Yeah, makes sense, yeah.
Did you know that if you sneeze and fart at the same time, you take a screenshot of yourself?
Lol.
LAPD, looking at Pat's dancing.
Oh, dear. Very good.
I might have found myself in a unique situation where it would be useful to coil.
So I'm glad you're all okay, then. So everything's... It's been, again, but the triple bypass has turned out to be like you've taken it in a positive way, and it's made you. And I've been through you're the first guest I've had who actually beats me in surgery chess, which I'm annoyed, or top trumps, which I'm annoyed about. Jay Rayner had some kind of hip replacement. He goes, I go, fuck off. I've had a ball off. Come on. But it's a pretty full on thing. And reading the book, I went through similar feelings about as you realise your own mortality and And it's sort of, and getting through it as well is a,
it's you, quite a gift actually, Richard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a gift in a way to, you know, like, I mean, I know it's really obvious, but yeah, when you've had that little brush, even if it's a bit, you know, not real, but it's real to you, it does concentrate the mind and make you realise what's important.
Yeah.
What's important at the moment to me is my, I've started rambling, you know, walking.
Okay.
And I would never have done that without it because you've got to keep a bit fit.
Yeah.
And there's, you can buy badges for your walking stick. And that, so I'm going to cover it. But that, yeah.
And badges that's important. Of places you've been to or of achievements.
Well, if I think you were meant to have walked this area, but I've driven through the M6, so that that gives me Cumbria and some others.
Okay.
But I only mean that. That sounds silly, but like, yeah, in a way your world shrinks and you do appreciate that you can get badges for a walking stick or your favourite cop.
Yeah.
That was the one that hit me, Richard, when I got back and the severity of the diagnosis hit me. I noticed for the first time things like my little tea towel that had been with me a long time, or the egg cup.
Yeah.
That I think maybe actually goes right back to my childhood home. God, they made me weep.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a bad lesson to have if you get away with it.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you feel good? And I did. I cried once after my, just as I got my, the phone call saying there was something in there. But I feel like it was because my son was laughing in the next room, and I was, you know, I started thinking about the future without me being in the picture. But it was very quickly my own self-indulgence rather than worrying about him. It was like, oh, he won't remember. I put in all this fucking work and he won't remember. He's not going to remember who I am. Yeah. It's going to be nothing. There'll be some other bloke in here who'll be his dad.
Yeah.
He'll be spending my money that I've earned.
And did you picture that man, and was he gorgeous? Like a sea captain.
Definitely would be.
Polo neck. You almost fancied him yourself.
Yeah, kind of absolutely. Thing. And I can't blame him. So, you know, you sort of feel sorry for yourself as well, obviously, because it's, you know, it's a weird thing. So many positives for me have come out of, you know, mine's a minor brush, I think. And, you know, the reading of what happened to you and everything you had to go through and the severity of it, it's much, much more so. But the positives that come out of, and the positives that have come out for you, which is obviously Paul Whitehouse.
Yeah, doing the fishing.
Picking you out of the depression. You know, you were a little bit depressed afterwards, a bit lethargic maybe afterwards, and he took you out.
I think it's not like clinical depression, but you it's quite a big op, and you've got this big slit down your chest. You like, you feel very vulnerable, and it only 3 months of sitting on a sofa can so quickly become six.
Yeah,
and become, you know, like, you just feel safe there. There's a phone. Your wife's there to look after you, you know. And it was Paul who insisted, no, you have to get out. Because he's had heart problems.
Yeah.
He knew that was one of the first little tiny steps, was just get out. So, yeah, that was... Did you keep your ball?
Well, I really wish I'd... When I went for the thing, she said, you're going to have to take it off. I wanted to say, can I keep it? Though she ever got any questions on, can I have it? Because I thought it was a good price for Taskmaster, was my actual, wasn't it? My initial feeling about it. I didn't ask, and I wish I'd asked her. But I don't think, if you've got religious reasons that you have to be buried with all your bits,
you can have it.
You can have it back. But I think otherwise you can't have it back.
Because it's one of those things that unravels and is a mile long or something, isn't it? No, it is one of the... Yeah. Well, it's a shame.
It's very coiled. It's a coil. It's a part of you that's very coiled.
I mean, the terrible thought is they probably just put it in the bin.
Yeah. I like to think this in a sort of celebrity section museum of the... And this is the testicle. Robin Asquith, who was on recently, he'd had something taken off at the same... an appendix or something. I can't remember what it was. At the same place. So, you know, they could have a little celebrity section of... bits they've taken off of museum, you know. I'd pay to go and see that, wouldn't you?
I'd pay to go and see famous bits. Testes.
Yeah. Not just testes, but, you know, there would be a few testes in there.
Yeah, I would. It's like, it would be that thing's like, if there was a booth with a curtain, just a simple curtain, and it said, Elvis's testicle in here.
Yeah.
20 pence.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be, but you'd have to open that curtain, wouldn't you?
It'd be worth 20p. The thing I liked about the thing the nurse said to you about after you'd had... So when you have this triple bypass, they stop your heart for quite a while. They have to stop your heart.
Yeah, my heart was stopped for 30... They inject it with the stuff they use to on death row. It's potassium or something.
Right.
To stop it, because they can't sew it when it's bouncing.
Yeah, bouncing around.
So it's 32 minutes it was stopped.
Yeah. And the quote was, nobody's the same after another human being has physically touched their heart.
Yeah, that's what she said, and that's how I felt at the time. Right. But no longer.
No longer?
No. Now my thoughts are much more of ambrosia cream dry. Do you know all the good stuff? Hot dog sausages.
How do you know the surgeon wasn't like a big rambler and he's touched your heart and that's what's...
No, that is a thought.
It could be that.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I love TV. I love watching TV. You, Richard?
I do, yeah, I do.
Do you watch a lot?
Watch a lot of TV, yeah. I mean, I do watch quite a lot of kids' TV, but that's our evening, yeah. Although it's all Netflix or whatever.
Do you watch Real Housewives?
No.
Anyone watch Real Housewives? It's just the best, isn't it? Are you watching Erica at the moment? You're doing Beverly Hills. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Try Potomac. Better than you might think. And the salt, sorry.
It's all right, nice.
No, but... It's all life is there, Richard. Yeah. Shakespearean, really. Yeah. But people... Do you know, what do you think of this, Richard? Like, I've gone through, you're the same, 30 years of TV and executives and meetings and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think there's many of those people you meet that actually watch telly?
I don't. I think you're absolutely right. I think the older you get, the more you really spot the chances amongst them. And like that, the thing I was working on, which I was talking to you backstage, all the production staff, just complete chance. They'd had no idea. You'd tell them, you'd say whatever the host said, they would laugh at, and then you'd go, "Yeah, that's not funny." They go, "Oh, okay." They didn't know what was funny and what wasn't funny. And and you spot that a lot, and there's very rare people. See, Richard Osman, who I'm a massive fan of, he loves television. He absolutely adores television. He loves populist television. He loves, loves non-populist television as well, but he's not ashamed by the idea of creating something that would be popular.
It's weird.
To lots of people, which I feel like a lot of people are snobbery.
Yeah. It's like I've got two sons, not two daughters, but have you seen the show Teen Mom?
No.
If I had daughters, I would consider it the most essential viewing they should watch. But if I say to TV execs, I'll watch it, have you seen Teen Mom or Below Deck or Real Housewives?
Yeah.
And they laugh. But that's their business. It's weird. I've always found it.
It is strange. But you're in this nice position where, I mean, you and Paul have this idea for a show and you were passionate about it and it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But you go in and someone goes, "Yeah, okay, go on, go." And that doesn't happen much to people. But like It is such a beautiful show, the Gone Fishing. It's I just watched the first two of the new series today, and it's you know, it's gentle but in a lovely way, but it's also you guys talking about stuff that that men often don't talk about, and you know, and to put that in a popular show, which is look at the beautiful scenery, look at the fun fish, but you can do great stuff with that with that format. It's
yeah, well, we didn't know that, Richard. It's like it's just that is just by chance.
Yeah.
It's like we asked when we I shouldn't think anyone here has even seen Gone Fishing, so but it's like we said we don't want a voiceover.
Yeah.
And that's a good tactic in two ways. One, it means there's no voiceover, so it'll be a better show. And two, it means that a TV exec will go, yeah, no voiceover, right? And they think that, you know that sort of
I do, thing. But that, now you've said it, I really want a sarcastic man to voice over Gone Fishing. And, I think they're clever, they've gone here. And it would absolutely ruin it, it'd be brilliant.
You're more than welcome to do it. I'd like to do it. Because it's a very vulnerable show, you know, It just sits on that thin line between indulgence or sentimentality and not, it's a...
Yeah, but it's again, Barry Cryer was a guest last week, and I think all these things hinge around whether you like the people involved in them. And the thing, everyone, it'd be very hard not to love you and Paul together. It's an incredible, two of the nicest people in the world. But it's just such a, there's the relationship is real, and the banter is real. And so some of it, when it's corny, it's funny, and when it's funny, it's funny. So you absolutely can't lose. But also, I think just, it's just that's important that to see two men talking about stuff, you know.
Yeah, we didn't mean to. We didn't mean to. And it was. I mean, it goes back to the heart thing, you know. So when you're fishing, we're there for 8 hours. So for an hour, we're doing the banter, they make each other laugh type of thing. But then 4 or 5 hours in, you know, like the gentle, the environment and the river and that. So suddenly you feel a bit comfortable. So how's your heart, Paul? How's it getting on? Didn't think that would be used,
right.
But they sprinkled a bit of it in the first series, and lo and behold, that seems to be part of the equation, really.
Yeah.
But the big success of it is, it's interesting once you start analysing TV that the public wouldn't, the public, that sounds bad, but that you wouldn't quite realise is we just go and sit and fish for 6 hours. So you have a film crew, a percentage of which has nothing to do. So they go and film beautiful shots of, you know, it's not just a B-roll. We are spending hours doing that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a rather pretty show as well, you know, but it's just by chance.
There's an amazing shot of you, which, you know, you're sort of thinking, how long did this shot set up? And maybe it didn't take any time at all, but where you spot a rainbow and then the camera has you two both cycling past the rainbow and the camera zooms in on the rainbow. It's absolutely astonishing photography.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I don't know how long it took you to do it or whether you had to retake that loads of times.
I think it just happened. Richard. Yeah.
Yeah.
You go to these beautiful places, and it's a good lesson in life. Go towards beauty and good things. Good things will happen. I'll tell another joke.
I have a joke book.
Good old jokes. It says on the front.
You love a joke.
I love a good joke. I love to be surprised by a joke. Your last joke was absolutely excellent.
Oh, did you like that?
I did, absolutely excellent.
You like? I put so much petrol in my car the other day I couldn't get in it.
And I usually tell these like Peter Beardsley, you know.
This was a tricky one. Not many people like this one.
Okay.
Is I see eggs are going up again. That will surprise a few chickens.
I'll stop there, sorry.
Oh, dear. The amazing story from the book that I hadn't heard before, and you don't have to tell all the stories from the book, so you don't need to tell it again if you don't want to, but you can, is that you were there when Jarvis Cocker mooned Michael Jackson and were heavily involved in this.
But I mean, the reason I was involved was kind of because I wasn't there in the God, the Brits, it's a dull old thing that.
Yeah.
And so I was around the back with Anth from Pulp.
Okay.
Makes me sound part of the scene, doesn't it?
It does.
But, and I was in the same porter cabin dressing room as Jarvis. And Ant came... This is quite a long story, shall
I? Yeah, it is. No, go
and Ant came... I'll keep it short. Ant came and said, Michael Jackson's people have arrested Jarvis. Which, of course, they can't. And arrest can only be effected by the police or a citizen in very restricted circumstances. So, and I was pissed. And it, right, throughout my career as a solicitor, I was so much better when I was drunk. It's very intimidating. No, police stations is very, very intimidating. And I used to have like, what were they called? It's before phones, a buzzer?
Oh, yeah, about a pager.
I used to have a pager thing. And so I'd be in the pub, oh, fuck, I've got to go to Camberwell Police Station. And if I'd had a few, I was good, I want to see my client. Yeah, in a couple of hours. No, now. And anyway, so I was a bit drunk. So I went up to, I mean, it really was like men and, you know, there were black suits,
right,
all surrounded this porter cabin. I said, I want to see me mate. I could have kept it short by not saying that bit. So I apologise for that. Okay. But I wasn't allowed to. But eventually there was a lovely female WPC who I said, look, and I said, I'm Jarvis's solicitor. I'm a solicitor and I'd like to see Jarvis. And she got me through in to see Jarvis after a lot of palaver. I had no idea what had gone on.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the worst, maybe he's had a fight, maybe there's something, I don't know. And so I got in there and said, Jarvis, and he was sat on this little sofa. I said, Jarvis, what is going on? He says, I showed me bottom to Michael Jackson. What have you done, Jarvis? I showed my bottom. Oh, fuck. But, yeah, but they were very, very serious. It all was a bit unpleasant.
Yeah.
And the police were lovely, and we agreed at the end that they said, can we arrest him? But you come along with him. We'll just go to the station and just book him out. We just need to get him away from these
I mean,
these people.
It's quite scary that they weren't letting... And even the police, they weren't really
The police
letting.
Were a bit frightened of them. Yeah. Yeah. They had, like, a spokesman... you know, like American.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, because of the movies, that's quite intimidating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not so intimidating if it's someone from Malta.
But what I love, it's still, you still feel, and maybe this is because of, I mean, it's because you're a nice person, but also the way you got into show business, it still feels like all your encounters with showbiz people, they're still like, what a regular person would do if they were thrown into these weird situations.
Yeah.
And you talk about I used to do this a bit when you meet people at parties and stuff and you talk about you thinking you're a wank and you've said the wrong thing. But everything. Yeah. So you talked to Sinead O'Connor early on.
Yeah.
And what did you say to her, Bob?
Well, we were almost queuing up to try and... Sinead was in the flesh and that nothing compares to you time. She was in the flesh, extraordinary looking woman.
Sure.
And every fella, we were at Paramount City.
Okay.
Around there. We're almost queuing as Jules Holland and Jonathan Ross and everyone queuing up to try and talk to her. And when it came to my turn, I said, have you got a local shop that's convenient to you, Sinead? And I wasn't trying to be glib or anything. It's just, fuck.
It's so good, though. That's so much. It's so much better than anything. But I would, we met... the Manic Street Preachers at something, and James Dean Bradford, isn't it? Is that his name? Yeah, the lead singer, and he's quite serious.
Yeah.
And I went up to him and said, you know that song you've got Kevin Carter, which is about the photographer who took all the pictures of the famines and stuff. I said, do you think that would have been better if you'd made it about Kevin Costner? That might have been a bit more commercially successful. And he just looked at me. He was really cross and just looked. Just went, yeah. It's funny.
Difficult,
but like, it's, you know, I would do that all the time. It used to really annoy Stu because he was wanting to be cool all the time, and right. I would always just right. try.
I can remember making Mark Lamar go up to Brad Pitt and ask Brad Pitt, Brad, how many murders were there in the film? 7. And he was lovely about it.
Yeah. But it's, and the one, there's, you talk to a cellist and ask her, she's an amazing cellist, and ask her if you
I asked her, yeah, something like, if did you bring, are you going home in a van or something? But those little things. Sinead O'Connor very kindly sent me a little video saying, which, you know, these things play on your mind.
Yeah.
She did send me a little video saying, "Bob, I have absolutely no memory of it whatsoever. Don't worry about it."
But also, she should feel bad for not going, I'm going to marry this guy. The guy who asked me about the local shop, this is the guy I should be with the rest of my life. It's also that, just that sense of fun. And, you know, you get, there's so many hijinks and weird situations you find yourself in this book. And it's, and I'm sure it's only, you've only touch the surface of the of,
yeah,
what
I mean, it was doing that. The show Would I Lie to You, because they're very ordinary little stories, really. People have enjoyed them, so that was what made me write the book, to be honest.
Yeah,
I thought, well, if that's all people want.
But you say in the book there's some things that are there things that are lies in the book, because
I've got two chapters in the book where you have to work out which are the lies.
But you don't tell us which ones are the lies.
No, did you? What did you think of the first lie section?
I couldn't think. I thought that the horse one, the horse in the house, is so ridiculous that I couldn't believe that one.
Right.
And the second section, there was something that just didn't. I can't remember what it was now. There was one I was. Yeah. Well, I don't want to spoil the fun for everyone else either.
But, well, I'm not telling you.
Oh, no, good. There was the second one. I think I might have got the second one, but only because it wasn't... Only because I just think that you can't have made up the horse in the house. It's so difficult. That's why I feel sorry for David Mitchell, because it's absolutely impossible to judge. It's absolutely genius when it happens.
But if you had the local witch's house... We've all got one, haven't we? You know, from the past. Wouldn't you creep round the back with your mates?
I didn't. I was scared. There was a local. It's a very sad story. Later became good friends of the family. There was a guy who had alopecia or something, so he looked very strange to a child. He was very upset, and he lost his wife in a plane crash. So he was devastated. Obviously, this guy, and he lived in this dark house with just trees in the garden. Mm. Just the whole garden. It wasn't a big garden, but just these massive trees and this very frightening house. And I just ran every time I walked. I passed it when I walked to school, and I would have to run past the house.
Yeah.
So I would never have
but
dared.
No go part of you with your mates later on said, "Let's penetrate that."
No, let's go in and see if there's a horse in there. No. That's why I find it difficult to believe, because I was absolutely terrified about the whole thing. Let me ask you some would you rather emergency questions, seeing I've got them here. My new book, which I reckon is going to do as well as yours. I think it's going to be a very close tussle at the top of the...
I was going to bring you a book tonight, Richard, because I've always been a fan of yours. But then I thought it felt a bit weird, like that you'd want a book.
I'm a massive fan of yours. I'd of course love to have. I've got a PDF of your book.
You've got a PDF,
which is lovely to have.
And do you understand the NFT thing? Is it NFT?
I know what you mean, the National Film Theatre. The thing where the people have a picture and it's in a thing and you spend $5 million on it and it doesn't exist, that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really understand why anyone buys it, but...
But would you like that PDF for $5 million?
I'd like it. If that was the only PDF and it was worth $5 million, I would be very happy to have it. But you know what? In a way... No, it's not worth $5 million. I was going to say, we're not worth $5 million. I'm going to ask you this. There's a question that I wanted to ask you.
I was trying some observation comedy on the train on the way up. Would this one work, Richard? I'm genuinely... God, fuck it. I saw Richard live. I'm going to say 10 years, but it's probably freaking 15 or whatever. And you were on Oxford Street?
Yeah.
The famous rock place.
The 100 Club, was that there?
Something like that, yeah. And... You had a mixed sort of audience, and you were saying, "Does any?" Does anyone remember the Mars bar?
Yeah. Well, you're lucky to see that. That's a very... I didn't do that one very much.
But the fucking thing is, is after, because you didn't have fucking rabbit holes. And after a while, there was people saying, they still sell it! They still sell it! Don't be stupid, don't even remember it. Fuck, it was funny. So I'm asking you in terms of like, as like a top observation comic.
Yeah, I'm very good at that observation.
I thought, have you ever noticed, yeah, you go into a supermarket, right, and you bend down to pick up a basket, and there's a receipt in it. You don't want it, do you? It's tarnished. Is that observation comedy? See, there you go. Yeah, you're giving it.
Okay, this is my would you rather question. It's not the one I wanted to ask you, but it's another one. Would you rather have to live the rest of your life with Emu from Rod Hull and Emu grafted onto your arm, and you have to keep him moving and reacting at all times, even when you're on your own? He right. can sleep when you sleep. If you're asleep, you can sleep, but he's got to... Or have to have a full bath every day, and once it's over, have to drink all the bath water before you're allowed to do anything else.
Well, when you were explaining the Emu one, I was thinking, no. Never. I have to manipulate him constantly.
He's just got to be alive. And he's on your arm. So you've lost an arm.
It's a good one, Richard.
It is good.
If the bath's got bath water in it.
Yeah, and someone else did say it would kill you to drink that amount of bath water.
I'm going to have to take the freaking Emu,
aren't
I? You're
going to have to take the Emu.
What a life. Oh, well.
This is what I wanted to ask you. Would you rather have the ability to produce honey from a special honey stomach? So it's a new thing in here, this honey stomach. And I'll tell you the conditions later. Or be able to make a pearl in your kidney every 10 years. You would sick the honey up through your mouth, producing 1 kilogram of honey per day that you could eat or sell to unsuspecting members of the public. Right. Each pearl would be worth $8,000. But you'd have to pass it with your urine via your urethra.
Ooh. Well, I think that's easy, isn't it? Yeah. I'm a honey man.
Yeah.
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 I don't see the downside of the honey.
I think you'd make more money from the honey as well.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's a kilo a day.
There'd be honey outlets all over with... Yeah. So it comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, well, you just sick it up. I think I imagine, like, bees do. I haven't really looked into it. That's why I imagine bees have a honey-making stomach of some kind of... And we buy that and eat that.
I was talking to honey, and my family suffers from hay fever, and I heard on the radio that if you have the local honey, it stops the hay fever.
Okay, yeah.
It turns out it is quite true.
It does actually
work, yeah.
Okay.
I once, someone when I was at school put a mashed potato scoop under the custard of my apple pie and custard, and I...
Oh,
ate
right,
it,
okay.
And I instantly spewed. I've never, you know, there was no like, oh, I remember. Just that surprise.
The surprise of
the texture,
potato
it? So, is there anyone you want to make instantly spew? Because there's the technique.
Well, you could make it spew again that I made that. Do you like the honey? Nice honey? I made that in my honey. And then you could sick up a bit. Show them how you sick it up. That's how I made it. That would probably make them sick, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No, but they'd probably stab you.
They might well do.
You've got scribblings on your book, like mad professor sort of approach.
I know,
to
well,
life.
My writing's very poor, so you know that's. I've actually printed some because I made some notes on the computer. I printed that up. Fight with Hurricane Higgins. That's a very good story. I'm not going to ask you to tell it. They'll have to buy the book. He had a fight with Hurricane Higgins.
When I see that list, I can imagine you furiously waddling around the supermarket, and all you come out with is a huge box of washing powder and a can of Lilt. And you go back to your wife and say, I've got everything that was on this fucking list.
Do you... the thing that struck me in the fishing thing, and the book's called And Away, which is obviously from the fishing show, is when you let the fish... back into the water,
yeah,
and let them live.
Let them live. Yeah.
Is that why you? Is that because you feel that happened to you? Is it? Were you let back into the water?
I suppose that's kind of my conceit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was out of the water struggling, and then some kind man, namely the surgeon, said, "Off you go." Yeah. Again.
It's nice because you don't say that, but you realise that as you're reading.
It's something like that.
It is,
yeah.
It's nice.
I was going to call it Cracker Barrel, a life, a life in a clown car. But and the way, yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. It was nice that you let the, you know, some of the fish survive.
Yeah. No, we let them all survive. Yeah. It's a weird one, fishing. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
We do it super safe, best we can, barbless hooks and everything.
Right.
But still, I mean, the majority of the hooks, as soon as you take the pressure off, if you use a barbless one, it just slips out. So this is why Paul's always saying don't wind and keep your rod up and everything, because it'll just go. But yeah, it's a difficult one. The fishermen, the one thing I've learned, Richard, because is that they really look after the river. No one gives a shit. Honestly, 17 million tons of raw sewage in the Thames every year. No one gives a shit.
It's ironic, isn't it?
That really is ironic, isn't it? Fuck, if you're struggling to say what irony is, there you go. That's ironic. Fuck yeah. So that's my little justification, you know.
No, but it is. It's so, you know. Do you think, I mean, it's a wise show. It's sort of nice to see two funny guys still being funny, but being a bit philosophical and. And you fit, and the books are philosophical as well. And you've been through some. I mean, you lost your dad very young, which is, you know, it's that weird thing. It's the thing from the reverse, isn't it? That I was worried about leaving my kids without them knowing who I was.
Yeah.
And then it's obviously horrible the other way around. It's a terrible thing the other way around, and for you not to know your dad. And
the horrible thing is, well, this will sound like it's just what I'm just saying it, but. Like, you won't have been able to select what memories your kids will have of you either, you know. They're very selective. So, I lost my dad when I was young, but I have so few memories of him, but one of the memories is that our toilet was downstairs. Our toilet was at the bottom of the stairs. And one day, I went down the stairs just as I'm going to leave it there.
I 100% know if I died now that all my kids would say about me is I did really stinky farts. I absolutely know that's all that they would say about me. That's all they remember about me now. That's
and taking your kids on holiday when they're young as well. Yeah. They have no memory of it.
No.
Mine are older now. That's what the main thing they criticise me for is why did you take us to Mallorca when we were two? What the fuck was that about?
But it's weird. My daughter was playing with her iPad. You know, they start with these iPads. They take loads of photos and they film themselves all the time, right? As soon as they understand they can film themselves, they start filming themselves. And my daughter went back on the iPad and found the photos and the bits of films and stuff she'd done. And it just makes you think, why didn't we film every single second? Because suddenly seeing a six-year-old looking at a two-year-old, a three-year-old, and they get so much joy out of watching themselves, but so do you. And you go, oh, there's a three-second clip. And you go, oh. Wow, what is it, you know?
And you can say, look at me, happy.
Well, there's a bit where my daughter, she loves her mum, but I think she likes me, but she makes out she doesn't like me.
Right.
And there's just a bit where is there like a two or three year old, and I've forgotten it. She goes, I love you, daddy. And it just made me go, oh, you did. Yeah. See, you love me at one point.
That's right. I think that's true, you know. I think the one who pretends not to like you is the one who likes you, innit?
I think so. She does a good impression sometimes of... Not... But she'll say something horrific and then she goes, I was joking, I was trying to do a joke. So she's trying to get to grips with the way comedy works and, you know, and understands that it's the wrong thing to say is to say, I hate you.
Do you have aspirations for her? Would you like her to be able to coil? Because you've got to start working young on that sort of shit.
Well, I'm hoping my son will learn to retract his penis.
Retracto and coil? Fuck.
They can both do. What a double act that'll be. I don't know. I'd like that. You know, you don't... I kind of like them being funny. They both are funny, but, I don't know whether I'd wish the life on them, but yeah. But as long as they're funny and happy, it's, you know, it's I want them to have a good sense of humour, and that's, and my wife gets cross with me when I do a joke that they fail to understand, or if I'm too mean and they take it seriously, which happens sometimes, and then my wife will get cross with me. But I want them to know that when you love each other, you can josh around with each other and be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a good...
It's very difficult to be a parent and not try to be a mate, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so tricky. I think our generation was the first to fail at it. yeah. No, it's true. I like those... Because I'm old, you can say it and people don't think you're a wanker. No, it's weird. You can get away with saying shit like, you know, you can only be as happy as your happiest child and people don't criticise you for it.
But it also feels like for both of you guys, you've kind of lived this life where you've been silly, childish adults, and it does sort of weirdly feel you get into your 60s and that confers that kind of Shakespeare fool wisdom on you, though, as well.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not true. No, because it isn't true, is it? I think that the youngsters these days, are they the wisest youngsters we ever had? It's true, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got to listen to them, man. And I would never have said, I don't think my parents would have said that.
No, well, unfortunately, yeah, I think it's, I'm not sure the world is listening as much as it should do.
But it's I think there's a lot of people said there's real hope in the youngsters. I think that sort of like you'll follow your parent thing has been broken a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's what's liberated them to an extent.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll do a joke.
Do another joke.
It wasn't worth saying. Do you want a joke, Richard?
I love jokes, yeah. I like you being serious as well, though. So that's, you know, I'm happy with it all.
I went to the doctor the other day and he said, you've got hypochondria. I said, oh, God, not that as well. So that's another lol.
It's good. I wish all my guests would come with a little joke book. It would make things make life a lot easier. I was going to ask you, is the film about Michael... We talked about Michael Jackson, but you're doing... Is the film about
the fans? Yeah, we're filming it in March.
Yeah, so it's about some collectors looking for Michael Jackson's training glove?
Yeah, he had a training glove.
Okay.
And a few people knew of it, but it was what gave him his... You know, with special powers to entrance the globe. And a collector's got it, and we're hoping to have a big star in it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm available.
Maybe Orion. You know, a big... So we're hopeful.
Yeah. That'll be very exciting. Get Brad Pitt in it. That'll be good. Yeah, it's a good start.
You look a bit like Brad Pitt.
I know.
Do people say? You do?
Well, a taxi driver once thought I was Brad Pitt.
Right.
And like I was going to the Riverside in Hammersmith for some reason in the back of his cab. And he was going, yeah, you Brad Pitt. And I was going, yeah, I don't, I'm not. No.
I hadn't noticed before. Yeah. Fuck you do.
Well, he's trying to look like me, I think. I think he's seen me and he's, because he used to have a different look and then he's sort of gone down my route. I think he's single again and he's got to try and get the... Try and get the ladies, so he's, yeah, why not? I'm a good looking guy. And Atletico Mints as well, which I've not really been into. I haven't listened to, and I listened to one and it's fucking impenetrable, but it's amazing. You can't just jump it, you can't just leap into that one, can you?
Maybe not, I don't know.
No, it's brilliant, but it's really amazing because it's absolutely. You doing exactly what you want to do.
I do like it because, it's just of the moment. But, it's like what you... Yeah, this, it's just so liberating to just do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some people listen. Not many did at first. People listen. It's not football.
It has a base in football, though, right? It sort of started as a football thing, and then so some of the characters are footballers.
Yeah, but now it's
football people.
It's about Neil Hunt, the nonsense Potter, and all sorts of shit. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it personally. But it's a journey, yeah.
But again, I think it's amazing to think even someone like you can find that freedom within. within that format to go, oh, I can just want to do this. And yeah. it feels like you write it, but write it fairly quickly. Would that be...
That is exactly right. Yeah. So it's just little other, yeah, little phrases and stuff. And I do a thing. Have you ever seen me? I do something called Train Guy.
Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah.
Yeah, well, with Train Guy, you know, I just do that because I'm getting the train back to Hastings. And suddenly it's that fun and it's the something to do.
Yeah.
I can't think of a... Yeah, yeah. He's a pretty hackneyed character, really, isn't he? We've seen it a million times.
No, I don't think it... I think, but again, it's that internet thing where if you weren't a successful personality already, it's the kind of thing that I think would break through because it's a recognisable character, but I don't think anyone's done it the same. And it is, and it works in that short burst, here's a funny thing, let's move on to the next one.
38 seconds, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you need to go to the Thought Roundabout and get off at Success Junction. Didn't say that right, did I? That was just Cliff Richards. Get off at Success Junction, have a campachucho on me, and all that business. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It's, you know, you've got this. It's a nice life, I think. And you were saying, I can't believe this is true, and I don't believe it is true that you don't get recognised very much in the street and people aren't shouting stuff at you all the time. But I think you found this nice balance where you're a regular person and fame doesn't seem to have gone to your head at all. In fact, if anything, reading the book, being a comedian, becoming a successful comedian has sort of improved your life in that you were very shy.
Yeah, no, like, that was the greatest gift it gave me. Yeah. Because it's no big deal, my shyness, but it is very frustrating. You know, like looking at people, like going to university and not making any contact. So everyone's, you know, like seems to be having a great time. Everyone's, you know, like, and you just can't penetrate just because you daren't say hello to a stranger.
Yeah.
You know, and then started doing the big night out and strangers came up to me and in an instant, yeah, all the fear's gone and I didn't have to do that. It's like performing on the stage. You know, there's quite a lot of shy performers, isn't there, Richard? Mm-hmm. They were really, really shy.
There are, yeah.
And it's like, on stage, you never have to talk to a stranger. You're talking at them.
Yeah.
But you never have to say, oh, hello, mate. Oh, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful release for a lot of comedians.
Yeah, I mean, I really get it. I was shy. I don't think, I talked to Rod Gilbert one of the online ones we did, and he was like incredibly shy. I mean, I think you and he are as shy as each other, and I consider myself still fairly shy in that sense. And it is a weird thing where you can, the freedom that somehow this is a different thing.
Yeah.
But it seems like, and for a lot of people and a lot of comedians, success seems to have either made them, you know, look at everyone else and be bitter about, you know, even if they're successful, they're looking the next person up, or it makes them very arrogant, or it makes them aloof, or they get depressed about trying to make people laugh all the time and try to find, you know, try and something serious to do. But you just seem to love the job, right?
And well, I mentioned in the book that a couple of times a year I have a meal with Matt Berry and Reese Shearsmith.
Yeah.
And we call it our gossip club. And we just talk about other comedians and decide which one is currently at the top of the lucky table and so on. But I think what's really going on there is a way of us checking ourselves.
Yeah.
And saying, we must all never get onto that, into that area, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I've succeeded, but it's, you know. You've seen it, Richard. It's hard to name names. Name them if you want.
I will not. I won't name. But also, you don't know. You don't. Yeah, I think again, as you get older, you don't know what people have gone through. You don't know what else is going on in their life. And so, you know, it's Stuart Lee. It's. Yeah. No. But the whole book. You're as a kid, you were a decent kid, and you were a mum's boy in the nicest possible way. In that, I think you recognised your mum had been through this terrible. I mean, this year where your dad died and you burned down the house happened within months of each other.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to cope with.
Yeah.
But you're a decent person. And even all the stories of childhood are you seeing other kids being beaten up, feeling empathy for them, and I think that's why you.
I didn't help though.
No, that's okay. You were shy. You were too shy to go up to bullies and say, "Hey, stop."
Too shy to scrap.
But you're a decent. You know, you're a decent person, and I think that's what really comes across from the book. Look, the book's fantastic, and not that you know. And I'm imagining the audio book is very good as well. You must have done the audio book.
I gave it a go.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like acting, though, isn't it? It's tricky.
It is tricky, but as you know, you talk about your acting in the book, and I've always, you know, when you work alongside real actors as a comedian, yeah. It always feels a bit like, oh my god. Yeah. But actually, it's only another form of confidence. And you are good at acting. You've done loads of acting, and you've been in loads of stuff. So.
I did a show called Randall and Hopkirk Deceased. Tell the story in the book, but Amelia Fox was next to the camera. Because someone stands for your eye line. And I had to act. So I said, but Amelia, I love you so much. And Amelia just laughed in my face next to the camera. So they got rid of Amelia. And Charlie Higson, who was directing it, stood for my eye line. And I said, but Amelia, I love you so much. Like, or whatever. Charlie burst out laughing. Then Vic tried it, and we ended up with, it's a true story that one, Richard. We ended up with the woman who was doing the teas and coffees. And I said, Amelia, I miss you so much because I love you. Like, she burst out fucking laughing. It's a tricky business. You just have to admit it. It's not my thing. I'm a great dancer. But I can't act.
It's not your main thing, but you
no,
can
it's
do
not
it.
My main interest.
But it's not. It's because you're so funny. But you do make everything funny. So if you're saying something serious, you know, it's well, always maybe. A little bit of Bob Mortimer under there, and it's a wonderful thing. So look, buy the audiobook. It would be my advice. Even though I haven't heard it, because I know it's going to be good. But definitely buy the book. It's called It's Away. And away. And it's away. Yeah, it's away. It's a living. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a huge round of applause to still my favourite guest, Bob Mortimer, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Mortimer. Still alive. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week. See you next week. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Bob Mortimer. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music right now. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Also, thank you very much to Chris Evans, not that one, and all the team from Go Faster Strike. And also, thank you everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. What a fantastic joy it is to be back in this fantastic venue. And I'm not just saying that because they're all looking at me right now. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges to become a monthly badger. You get discounts, you get badges, you get a secret code, you get access to backstage interviews, you get so much stuff, and it's only £3 a month, and all of it goes to making more podcasts. It's insane. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.